I try to highlight the idea that even in startups, it's not only about tech. Maybe tech is the less complicated things in startup.
Welcome back to the Indie Worldwide Podcast. My name is Anthony. I have with me today the wonderful Anna Bibikova, my partner on Wise and Guides, and a badass founder. How's it going?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Hi, Anthony. It's so exciting. I just love being here.
Well, so if y'all don't know, Anna and I have been working together on a project for 4, 5, 6 months now called Wise and Guides, which is a blog for startup founders to get them started with all kinds of different marketing strategies. We interview founders and we turn those interviews into these really in-depth guides on things like, I don't know, what are we writing about, Anna? What's come out recently?
I think we're working on the pricing guide, aren't we?
Working on a guide for pricing. We just launched one about interviewing users and another about market surveys.
The surveys, right, and now the pricing, and there's something that's very complicated but very fascinating for me. It's programmatic SEO.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one too. I think we're going to do an Indie Worldwide event on the topic as well. And we actually got connected through the Indie Worldwide Slack. I saw you were posting about some things you were writing and things you had launched on Gumroad. I thought, hey, this seems like it would work really well with Indie Worldwide. Like, we've got startup founders here that are looking for this kind of content. And one thing kind of snowballed to another, but I think it all started in the Slack. I think you were already in the Slack.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm there. And it was a fantastic, like, the connection that we had from the very beginning. It was fantastic and very unexpected for me because I'm a very introverted person. I don't usually, you know, make friends very easily. And yeah, when you just reached out and we kind of started talking about the things that I'm doing, the things that you're doing, it just clicked. And it was great. I think, are you happy with our experience together?
I am. Yeah, I think it's been a really good partnership so far. And it's funny you bring up introvert right away, right? Because you've got a whole brand around introversion and like being an introverted founder. And I consider myself also to be like an introvert in most ways, although like I'm also a community host and do a lot of extroverted things. When it comes down to it, I like being alone most of the time. so maybe we get along because of that.
That's maybe probably it. But actually, there is this misunderstanding about how the whole introversion thing is working. Introverts get overwhelmed by lots of interactions with many different people. So when we start getting lots of social cues simultaneously, that's when because we're not actually very bad with social interaction. We are actually very good at it. Maybe we are way too good. That's why we get so overwhelmed by all the social interaction, because we're very good at listening and receiving all these social cues. And when there are too much of them, we just get tired very easily. And because extroverts are much more experienced, they're naturally their natural skills, that they can keep focus much better. Mm-hmm. So they can switch between different objects they're keeping their focus on. And introverts, we just can't do it. We try to get all the cues simultaneously, and that's what gets us so tired and overwhelmed. And that's why we need to stay in private, to be on our own for some time after interacting with too many people. But one-on-one connection is a totally different story. You don't have, especially when it's done online, right? You kind of have this feeling of controlling. You kind of can control the environment. You feel protected. You feel safe. And there is much less uncertainty about this kind of interaction when it's online and when it's one-on-one. So introverts are actually great with establishing one-on-one connections, and especially when they're online. Yeah, and I know that because I'm running this kind of side project, maybe fun project for me. It's called Nigel the Introvert. It started because, like, sort of maybe less than a year ago as well, just about the time when we started working on Wise and Guides. because as a child, I've been introverted in my life, obviously, because it's kind of thing that you get from the very beginning. It's not something that will be developed throughout the years. I was about to actually write a book for introverted founders because I saw kind of lots of people around me who are also introverted. And I thought it could be a useful thing for startup founders, especially, you know, technical people, they're pretty often introverted. How to think about doing marketing and sales and be more active on social media while being an introvert, and do everything without like emotionally draining yourself. And as a marketing person, as a, like an entrepreneur, I started with validating the idea. So I basically posted like on Twitter and on LinkedIn, like a request for people to become my beta readers. So it, I asked for like about 2-3 days of commitment from people. I didn't ask for money. Like, would you like to that was not a pre-sale. But it was like, I tried it to see if they would like to commit their time. Because for me, time is actually more valuable than money, maybe because of that. And I figured that introverted people, they start realizing these things about themselves somewhere like a little bit later along the journey, when not very young. And when they're later, it's later along the journey, like middle age maybe. We start valuing time more than money, actually. That's why I asked for this time commitment. And yeah, you know, I actually got about 35, 40 signups. People wanted to become my beta readers. But what I actually did, I also arranged some kind of conversations with them. I ran a little survey and I scheduled some interviews. And I asked them basically, if there was just one thing you could learn from this book, what would it be? And you know what? It turned out none of them wanted to read about introversion or introversion-related topics. Like, basically, everyone wanted to read very basic conventional stuff, like how to do sales and marketing, how to get more customers. No one actually thought about this from the perspective of an introvert, how to do it without emotionally draining yourself. So they were not very self-focused. They were much more, again, revenue-focused. And that's why I decided I'm not going to go ahead with this project, at least not on this stage. Maybe I have to reframe it somehow, but not like I wanted it to be in the very beginning. So that's why it's so important to validate the ideas. And right now I'm working on like a free email email course on how to do it properly.
What advantages do you think an introvert has when becoming a startup founder? Are they better suited to certain businesses? Are there certain tasks that they're better suited for? How would you recommend the introvert go about starting the company that they want to start?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And I think actually it's a great advantage if you're a bootstrap founder and if you're introvert. Because basically what I'm trying to explain in my course on idea validation as well, that as soon as you get the idea, you shouldn't jump into building it. And more or less all of us know that. Yeah, I mean, there are different kind of approaches to this. There is like this theory that we should go a lot with testing, like lots of testing, ship lots of products, like do one product a month and see which one takes off. Yeah, it's a good approach. You can basically do it. But another one is to go deeper with understanding the audience, understanding the customers you're going to build this product for. And if you want to really understand the customers and people you're going to serve with your service or tool or your product, there is no way around customer interviews. You actually have to schedule real life conversations. And it can sound a little bit scary and intimidating if you're an introvert and you kind of think, oh, no big deal, I just go ahead and analyze data from the social media. I do some social listening. I use some, audience discovery tool that do everything automatically. They just pick specific keywords and how often people talk about this and what kind of complaints do they show about specific product. But it's not very feasible, because as soon as you start actually talking to real people, you might find out that things that people actually tell on social media, it's not what they really think and what they really feel. Because people usually go to social media for a specific reason. Some people go to social media to grow their audience and get more customers. Other people go to, get rid of the stress and just be very vocal about the problems that they have. But these problems could be neither urgent nor very pressing, and they don't occur very often, actually. If they show lots of emotions, a very emotional attitude to this problem on the social media, it does not mean that they're willing to pay anyone for solving this problem. And the only way to find it out is actually talk to people. And during the real conversations, you can pick up all the signals that are much more important. And introverts, as I already mentioned in the very beginning, were absolutely brilliant. We are much better than extroverts in picking specific social signals from individuals. We are not very good at picking all the signals when in a group, but when it's one-on-one conversation, we are very good. If you wish, more intuitive. We can pick all these signals during the conversation, and we are very good in transferring them into actionable insights. Because interviews are much more about qualitative data, not quantitative. The quality of the conversation, the quality of the interviews that we're having with people are super important. Introverts are much better in this than extroverts.
I'd love to back up a little bit and get the story of Anna. How did you become interested in indie hacking? Have you always been a startup founder? Have you always been bootstrapped? What was your in into this whole universe?
I think I ended up in the whole startup industry by sheer occasion. And when I ended up there, I figured out that I've been a bootstrap startup founder all my life. I just didn't call myself that. So I started my entrepreneurial journey when almost 19 years ago now. And the first business that I had was a content marketing agency, when people didn't know what was that about. Content marketing just was non-existent then. It was new fancy term people were talking about, but no one actually knew how to do all these things. And we started this agency with two other co-founders. I was the third one. And they were much older than I was, and they were very experienced. They got great background with Harvard Business Review. They were much more about printed press, printed media. And that's what we were specialized in, printed publications. And we managed to grow the agency to one of the top 10 nationwide in 3 years. It was amazing, but again, because the market was very new and very fast growing, and we understood our niche very well. We were specializing on internal communications, publications for employees. Now we have these internal web portals. People in one company or Slack, then Slack appeared, and people in one company started communicating in Slack channels. But before everything this happened, and when the printed media was a winner, there were internal newspapers for employees, and that's what we're specializing in.
So what year is the startup that we're talking about?
Yeah, it was 2002. Oh my god, it's already 20 years. Yeah, 2002.
Nice. 2002, 20 years ago, pre-Slack days, and we're helping companies communicate internally. And this was also a bootstrap startup,
right?
You guys didn't raise any money.
Exactly. Yeah, to spread, you know, the big vision from the big bosses, and to fight this the information silos, to encourage people to communicate with each other. Because when people could not, you know, tell stories to each other through Facebook or Slack or internal portals, the only media they had was this newspaper. So we tried very hard to tell the stories of real people, and that was the way to encourage communications in big companies. Yeah, but after several years it was already 2005 2006, I started figuring out that web is going to be the next big thing, so we should start moving somehow in this direction. But my partners, they didn't want to do anything because they were in their comfort zone, the business was doing great, and the most importantly, they didn't want to learn new things because they were very experienced. They were like closer to 50 years old, and they were like, we don't need this new stuff just to enter our life. And they didn't want to hire someone young but someone who knew more about web communication, about building communities online, and creating content marketing online than they used to know. So yeah, and they didn't want to move in this direction. I said, okay, no worries, I'll just sell you my shares and go and build my own agency. But that's not what happened. I sold my shares, but I was invited first to work in Cyprus as like a marketing manager, head of marketing. Then I was invited to work as a editor in chief for a big magazine, industry specific magazine on retail. And that's how I became very passionate about this industry, the retail industry. And because I was born in Russia, that was my second return to this country. When I saw it was 2009, and I saw a huge potential there because the retail market was growing very fast, and there were so many new opportunities to explore. And I decided to marry my new passion for retail and my actual education that I had, because I did my master's degree in Oriental Studies. I'm an expert in Oriental Studies, something totally inapplicable in business. And I decided that why don't I use it now and build another business trying to put all these two things together. And I started building a retail chain of Asian grocery stores with a pretty innovative concept. All Asian markets, supermarkets, and almost every country, they're much more aimed at communities. Chinese supermarket would be aimed at Chinese community everywhere. Mm-hmm. Korean supermarket would be mostly aimed at Korean community. Of course, everyone is welcome there, but they mostly try to interact with their specific community. All the price tags would be in Korean, or maybe the windows, the decoration will be very Korean specific. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I wanted to bring Asian food to Russia and to aim it at actually Russian people who had no idea what to do with all this Asian food. People who knew nothing about Indian cuisine or Chinese cuisine or Thai cuisine. They might have traveled once somewhere, and they just got this amazing experience. They interacted with this culture, and they wanted to repeat this experience when they get back home. So those were the people we wanted to target. So it was there was a lot of education there. It was a lot of actually demand generation, and that's why it took us so long to build everything. And
did you open stores?
The concept was that we had a store, and there was the tasting facilities, and everyone who entered the store could actually cook whatever they wanted there, being supervised by the in-store personnel. So I've never seen anything like that before, like cooking.
So you would
school.
Teach them how to use the ingredients while selling them.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Oh, that sounds really cool.
So not just like giving instructions. Okay, write down the recipe. But they actually could come in and they could cook, being guided by store employees right there in the store.
Nice. This is so what this wasn't facility. Just a concept, right? Like this actually opened up and existed.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. So we ended up having 10 stores altogether.
Wow.
Then we also spinned off with a just online cooking school when we figured out that we can't teach everyone who come in because of the space limitations.
Yeah.
And so we opened up online school, and people who didn't have time right there on the premises, we just gave them the web address. You go there and you can learn how to do it. The fact was that I ended up spending 99% of my time just managing people. And that's what, again, introverts are not very good at, like managing big groups of people. I wanted to do more like marketing. I wanted to do more like exploration of new concepts, of new new maybe products, talking to customers, trying to understand the feedback, trying to get insights from them, like creative stuff, like marketing campaigns. But I didn't have time for any of this. So I had to basically delegate and outsource things that I loved and deal with things that I didn't like to do. That's why the burnout, I believe. So in 2016, it was obvious for me that I have to stop. I was under horrible stress. It was a horrible depression. I just could not do anything physically. I just slept for 24 hours. I couldn't move. I couldn't eat. I lost 10% of my body weight. My family was not very happy with that because I also had a kid and I didn't see them. I felt you know, these moms who are very neglectant to their kids, who don't have time for their family. And I decided to stop.
You're working all the time. You're running a chain of 10 stores at this point. You've got almost 60 employees. You're kind of burning out. So then what happens?
Yeah, then I just sold everything that I could. I closed the stores that were not profitable because in retail it happens a lot. Unfortunately, there are stores that bring in money and there are stores that suck in money. So
right.
I closed everything that didn't work and I sold everything that actually was profitable. And I moved my family to Cyprus because
still exist under the same brand?
I actually have no idea. I know that they still have the online school, but I was so tired of this that I just closed this story for myself and I didn't venture actually to check it out.
It's a fairly brilliant way to sell ingredients to a market that's not familiar, right? Like first you give them the motivation why they want the ingredients. Well, here's a very tasty meal you can make if you had them, you know, so let me teach you how to make the tasty meal and then you're going to want to buy the ingredients.
Yes, absolutely. It's like how loss aversion worked. I studied a lot also behavioral marketing when I was running retail. This kind of things, they work very well in retail. Like when you put the most expensive products in front and it creates kind of anchoring. People see something super expensive and then they move further and they see this price tags decreasing and they see, oh, that's a great deal. Because the first impression was, wow, that's super expensive. I can afford it. But then they see the price tag decreases and it feels much more comfortable. They feel much more comfortable about
it. Since the beginning of the pandemic, my mother's been taking these drink making classes, right? And it's very similar idea. you take the class, they tell you ahead of time, like, okay, we're going to make these two different cocktails. These are all the different ingredients you need to buy. Like, P.S., like, the best whiskey to use is our own. Go to, like, I don't know, jamesonwhiskey.com and pick up a bottle. And I'm sure they've sold a lot of booze that way. Plus, they are also getting paid for the classes.
Absolutely. You know, how Tony Robinson works. He makes millions with the same stuff.
And it's been awesome. Learned how to make all these different cocktails, and whenever I was home, I got to be the taste tester. So I think it's a great, I think it's a great model just for that.
Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Totally. So yeah.
So now in Cyprus, you've moved your family. What year is it now? Yes, what year are we moving to Cyprus?
It was in 2017. We moved in here. 2018. Okay. Yes, and I was like, I'm not going to work anymore. I'm going to spend all my time with my family. I'm going to have like 10 more kids and be happy.
Have you made enough money from the sale where like you don't need to work anymore at this point? Or what's your thought process?
It was like, yeah, I felt myself like, let's say, pretty comfortable at that point. But not like I was hoping not to work maybe never ever again. But I knew that I would definitely last for maybe next 5 to 6 years. And I was, but obviously that's not what happened. Like me, after maybe in like maybe 5-6 months here in Cyprus, I was reached out by my friend here who we had like a mutual connection with, and we worked together like in 2008 on this big project that we used to sell to Cyprus government. He's running now like one of the few local accelerators. And he said, look, why don't you lecture? Why don't you talk to our cohort? Why don't you talk to our students? You know a lot about business. Just go ahead and talk to them. I said, Yanis, I don't know nothing about startups. How come you've been building startups all your life? Your marketing agency was a startup. Your retail chain was a startup. Okay, you didn't call it that way, but it was an innovative concept, and no one was doing that at that time. So it was lots of trial and errors. You didn't like follow some specific guide. You didn't know your audience. You just had an idea and you went ahead just trying to execute it. So go ahead and talk to my students about whatever you want, what you think is more important for building a successful business. So that's how it started. I started talking to these founders in the accelerator program. And I started talking about things that I felt was important, you know, like classics, how to build frameworks, systems, how to start like documenting everything, how to do job descriptions, how not to burn out. Again, since it was important, were important to me at that time. And I found out that it was something that did not resonate with them at all. Because, you know, when you're a startup founder, you don't think about this stuff. You're not sure that you will survive another 6 months. Right. You don't know anything about your product marketing. So the only thing that you care about is actually validating your ideas and finding these first customers. So that's how I pivoted more to the marketing topics. And that's actually what I'm very happy about, because that's actually what I was passionate about in the very beginning. And that's something that I liked to do, my most favorite things. And yeah, that's how I started talking to them. And again, when you reached out, I was mentoring for several years, and then I was invited as a volunteer mentor in the Founder Institute program. It's a global one. They have the headquarters in the U.S. I believe in Boston, or I don't know, maybe it's Mass Challenge in Boston, whatever. So they have the headquarters in the U.S., but they have programs like all over the world. And I deal mostly with the founders from the Middle East and the Western, the Eastern Europe, because we're in the same time zone here. And somewhere around when the pandemic struck, it was like I started having lots of, I was invited in 2000, 2020 to do this Founder Institute program. And it became very overwhelming experience again for me because, I mean, lecturing is fine. You just make this Zoom 1 hour lecture, and that's great, like once a month, and that's great. But then you have to schedule actually mentoring sessions, and that could be, you know, 5 mentoring sessions a day. And founders, they started asking me all the same questions. So, and I had to spend lots of time just explaining all the same basic things again and again and again, like how to validate the idea, how to do customer development, how to recruit customers for interview, where to look for people for the customer interviews, what questions to ask, how to do like very basic things. They could obviously read somewhere, but they didn't bother, or they didn't know that they should read about them. So I started thinking maybe I should write a book or a course or whatever. And I was thinking just as a go-to resource for them so that they could go and read it. And I would be able to say, okay, so go ahead, read this resource, and then come to back to me. And we will discuss the specifics of your startup. So how can I help specifically you with that? I don't want to waste my time explaining all the basics again and again. And maybe I would be able to cut down my mentoring sessions to maybe 1 or 2 a day, because founders would not have these basic questions. They would be able to read everything online. And I was like kind of pondering this, thinking it over and thinking it over and procrastinating. And that's when you showed up with the idea of voice and guides.
Perfect timing.
That was a match made in heaven.
Nice. Yeah, because I was kind of coming from the same problem in Indie Worldwide, where it's like the same kind of questions kept coming up over and over again, especially at the kind of early stage where it's like, all right, I have a little bit of traction, like a little, I've got a product, I've got a couple users, I'm trying to figure out this marketing thing, trying to crack that nut, and I want to learn how to do, you know, content marketing or how to figure out what the next thing I need to build is, or all these sorts of problems just come up over and over and over again. How do I do cold email outreach? It's one that comes up a lot. And so I wanted to write these like guidebooks, like basically the same thing you're describing, right? Like here's how to do X, here's how to do Y. And then instead of needing to type the same thing out over and over again, I can just say, hey, we wrote the best guide ever right here. Check it out. And then exactly. You started posting about your thing, and I think it was pitched almost the same way. It was like Founder Library or something like this. I was like, wow, let's just make this the Indie Worldwide Founder Library.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, why not embrace it and, you know, just send this all this traffic somewhere else? Or you can send it to your own resource. Yeah, that makes total sense.
And that's how it happened. Where should people go to learn more about you? Where should they follow you on the internet?
Yeah, I'm pretty active on Twitter. That's probably the most active, my platform of choice. I have a handle, NoTechAnna, and that kind of, I try to highlight the idea that even in startups, it's not only about tech. Maybe tech is the less complicated things in startup. So don't be so focused on tech. Try to figure out the other important things, like the problem you're solving, the audience you're serving, the channels you're going to use, your marketing distribution, things like that. And tech, I mean, there are so many ways to solve the problem. Even tech could be totally different. You can do the no-code solution, or you can code everything from scratch using Python or JavaScript. So it's not a competitive advantage anymore, right? The specific technical solution. There is so much more about startups. That's why I basically called myself NoTechAnna. Yes, or you can find me like putting my first name and last name, Anna Bibikova, as well. I also have a LinkedIn account where I'm not maybe so active, but I also try to post there at least once a day. And my LinkedIn content is much more, you know, lengthy because you can't be so lengthy on Twitter for the obvious reasons. I also have a website. It's called aninspiringfounder.com, where I host my, where I write blog posts, I write my newsletters, stuff like that. So yeah, you're welcome to visit it as well. And obviously, everyone go and find us on Wisen Guides, because that's where I constantly and continuously and consistently post the best content about setup.
All right, I'll share the links to all of that below, and is super active on Twitter and LinkedIn. Our content's really solid. Do you have any parting advice if somebody's just getting started? What should they be thinking about in the first like month?
Oh my, yeah, you know, I'm actually, again, I encourage everyone to go to my website and join my free email course on how to figure out, like how to find customers before you build a product. That's what it is about. It's a 7 days email course, and I try to explain how to make basically assumptions and hypotheses about the product and the audience, and how to test them, and how later on, when you test them and your hypothesis is proved to be true, you can engage these people in building your product. And that's the only and the best way to gain customers before you build a product, actually, because if they are invested, if they are supportive, if they're interested in what they are doing, they will be your first beta customers, and they be your first, the best amplifiers. They will spread the word about your product because it's something that resonates with them personally. Yes, and if you're just starting, like trying to figure out to choose what idea to go with, I suggest to make this, like basically write them in a list, all the ideas that you have, and make the assumptions about 5 assumptions, basically, about each idea. And these assumptions should be about the activity around the problem you're solving, the problem itself, the customer, like, for example, let me give you an example with like the experience that I had recently when I lost my puppy. I believe the assumptions should always start with the phrase "I believe." So I believe that people who lost a dog or lost a puppy would not be able to find it using just Facebook groups. So here you state the activity, the lost puppy, and they're trying to find it, and they're not able to find the puppy using just Facebook groups. So that's a problem statement, the assumptions about the problem. Then you have to make an assumption about customer willingness to pay. Like, and why do you believe so? Like, I believe that people who lost a puppy and have troubles finding them through Facebook groups would be willing to pay at least $50 for a tool that will help them finding this puppy, because they're eager to pay at least $500 as a reward. So these people are already ready to pay, and you know that for sure. And so they would be obviously eager to pay 10 times less if someone would offer them the solution. Next, you have to make a statement about like alternative options these people would be using, like, to solve this problem. I believe people who have this this problem with the puppies and the Facebook groups, they would be contacting vet centers, like local vet centers to notify, or local shelters to notify them. So that's another option. And then the last one is that you have to make an assumption about how aware these people, this audience you're going to serve, these customers you're going to sell your problem product to, about the problem. It's either they're aware or either they are not. So obviously, people who lost a puppy and who have this problem, locating the puppies through the Facebook groups, They are very much aware of the problem, right? So there is no yes or no about it. So they're obviously aware. So that a solution that would be able to solve a problem for people who lost their puppies and can't find it through Facebook groups, it will be a very hot seller. Basically, any solution that you can come up with, any technology that you can use, it could be GPS trackers or just anything. It could be a great, you will have a great opportunity. You have a ready-to-use market. And like basically, you know what customers you're going to address and you know where to find them. You know that they go to Facebook groups, they contact vet centers. So that's a ready-to-use marketing and business plan. And it all starts with very, very basic five assumptions, your beliefs about the product and the problem around it that you're about to solve. And the first thing, obviously, you have to validate these assumptions, running a couple of interviews. And it's a great thing if you have this personal experience because it helps you to make assumptions. But if not, you have to constantly validate it through the set of customer interviews. So that's how I always suggest to start.
Nice. I think we better wrap things up here since we're already getting close to time. I think we're in the overtime. Anna, thanks so much for being on the podcast. And obviously, thank you so much for being my partner on Wising Guys. That's been awesome. We'll have to catch up again soon on the air. I think there's been chatter in the air about a Wising Guides podcast, so maybe we'll start doing these discussions regularly.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thanks so much for coming on. Have a good one.